Now, we've been approached by the Library of Congress as well, and they want to memorialize this podcast as being culturally redundant and self-referential.
Especially episode 100.
Yes.
I can't
believe we basically talk about
ourselves.
That's going to be the title of my autobiography, Our Podcast Ourselves.
Oh, God. Okay. Myself. That's really what yours should be. Yeah. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today is another Life Lessons in Gen X Movies episode featuring the one, the only, the legend, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Once again, we return to a John Hughes classic and ask ourselves, among other things, can you ever go too far? Is it possible that your problem is actually you? And is the journey far more important than the destination? For many of us, growing up wild in the 80s, Ferris was the guy we wanted to be or the guy we wanted to date. So get out of bed, grab your fringe jackets and animal print sweater vests, hop into your dad's vintage Ferrari and come along with us back to June 5th, 1985. We're bailing on class and we don't care because we're Gen X and we know exactly what a Finsky will do to a guy's attitude.
Nice.
Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. That was quite an introduction. I'm familiar with this movie slightly. In fact, maybe this calls for a costume change.
I was going to say, we should have had you dress up like Ferris.
I got nothing but time, girl.
Oh, everyone, Mark and I dressed on Halloween one year as Sloane and Ferris.
We did.
For a podcast.
We did.
Not our podcast. It was a podcast that we were a guest on. Isn't that the one that turned really spicy,
angry? That guy bitched out, man.
And that was wild because we were all dressed up, and I never feel like I'm really fully prepared for things to go down.
Yeah.
When I'm dressed like someone else. I was just, I was in shorts.
Your guard is down?
I was in shorts and like fringe boots and a jacket.
It was great. And you had stunt hair on.
And I had stunt hair, but then I'm not myself. I'm like in this weird outfit.
So you change characters based on what you're wearing.
Well, I'm just, you know, don't you have that? Do men have this where you go in with like your battle armor on?
A little bit. Like, you know, if you feel confident and appropriate, then you can, it's definitely going to help you, you know, kind of feel your oats a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't think it goes as far as changing my personality necessarily.
No, it doesn't change my personality, but it does change the level of my confidence. So you're never going to see me go in, for instance, on a call for my real life job. And I'm not wearing, you know, I've got a messy bun and I might have a messy bun, but it's going to look like it's purposeful.
Yeah. It's like I got a deliberate messy bun.
It's deliberately this way, everyone. And I've got my makeup on and I've got my business suit on and I am ready to go and, run the room.
My confidence level doesn't really dip that low.
No, it doesn't. Right?
Whether it's deserved or not, right? I will go into something at an 8 or a 9 when somebody else might say, well, you should probably be like about a 5.5 or a 6. But it doesn't matter to me. I believe in me.
You have that in common with Ferris
Bueller. Yeah, exactly. I don't believe in isms.
Not that I condone fascism. Or any ism for that matter. Isms, in my opinion, are not good. A person should not believe in an ism. He should believe in himself. I quote John Lennon, I don't believe in Beatles, I just believe in me. A good point there. After all, he was the walrus.
I just believe in me.
Uh-huh. So, hot take on Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Mark.
It's a generational film, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of the greats of all time. It's very, very representative of that period of time. It also gave its audience a lot to identify with and then even to aspire to. Mm-hmm. It's probably Matthew Broderick's greatest performance. I mean, he was the film. Very good to great supporting cast, like Cameron great, Sloane good, right? I mean, Mia Sara was good in that, but
nothing. Well, she didn't have a big
meaty, that's what I mean. You know. Yeah. I mean, she wasn't asked to do much more than that, right? Mm-mm. But I mean, Cameron's performance, Alan Ruck was brilliant,
yes.
Right? But it had a great soundtrack. It had a great look. Mm-hmm. It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Had a great, you know, vibe. It definitely was really evoked the spirit of Chicago, you know, and I think it had some good life lessons. Not, you know, like it wasn't Epictetus, right? It's not Plato, but they had some good life lessons that were, more importantly, not just preached, but well illustrated by the film.
Do you think that it transcends its time?
I think it holds up very well.
The test will be the following generation. Like, is this a film that is a classic that you hand down through the generations? Do I sit down with my grandkids at some point and say, hey, come and watch this movie?
Oh, yeah.
I think that it does, because I think that the life lessons that I've selected to discuss, I think they cross generations.
And in addition to that, I would like to say,
let's talk a little bit about the background of the film. All right. So it's a 1986 American teen comedy written, co-produced, and directed by John Hughes.
Right. And now, where do you rank this in the Hughes pantheon?
Oh, right up there. So if
one or two?
Yeah.
For me, it's number one, but I think you're probably number two.
I would
behind
say
16 Candles.
No, you know, I would say that Ferris Bueller is probably number one. And then
I think you have to say that, right?
And then 16 Candles.
Yeah.
And then I would say like Breakfast Club. And I'll tell you one of my other ones by John Hughes that I love that a lot of people are not huge big fans of is She's Having a Baby.
I know. You love that movie.
I love that movie.
I saw it one time. I'm like, yeah, that was cute, whatever. But
I think you got to give that another. Maybe we'll do life lessons in that movie, because that one is a really good. It's a good movie. I think that it is. It's a worthwhile film to watch. It's got some good life lessons in it.
You know, I'm all about that.
Amongst them, the grass is not always greener on the other side of the fence. So Hughes wrote and directed this and all of the rest and filmed on location in Chicago largely. There were some things, exteriors and such, that were filmed in California. But he considered this his love letter to Chicago. So early on when you gave the hot take and you said it's a great representation of Chicago.
Yes.
There's a reason for that.
Oh,
because
course.
He's really showing you kind of all of the highlights. You are a tourist as much as Ferris. And
you're going to the museums.
Sloan,
you're going to a ball game.
The Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
You know?
You're having a hot dog. Might get a little bit of sausage stuck in your aorta.
You're in a parade.
Yeah, you're the sausage king of Chicago.
Oh, that's right. He says, I really wanted to capture as much of Chicago as I could, not just in the architecture and landscape, but the spirit. And I think he really does. Anybody who has spent time in Chicago will love it and recognize that he does the city a solid.
If you're familiar with Chicago and you want to really tug on those heartstrings, just watch the montage.
When they're going and doing all of the good things.
Exactly. They're doing the
Sears
museum,
Tower.
Sears Tower.
At the time, it was called the Sears Tower.
Right.
Willis Tower now.
You know, the Cubs. Mm-hmm. Was it the Cubs game?
Cubs game.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then obviously ends up with the parade.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want to get a feel for Chicago, that is a great little snippet of just Chicagoosity.
Yeah. It featured, as you said, Matthew Broderick. Mia Sara played Sloane Peterson, Ferris's girlfriend. Alan Ruck played Cameron, his best friend.
Yeah.
And Jennifer Grey played his sister.
Jennifer Grey, pre-plastic surgery.
Yeah. And I think looking actually better. I like the way she looked normally than better than after plastic surgery. Ferris in this film regularly breaks the fourth wall to explain his techniques and inner thoughts. Which
sure
was
does.
Really fun to have him do.
And that was one of the first times you saw something like that, right? I mean, that has now been repeated a few times.
Right.
Like, we really kind of sat up when we saw that, right?
Yeah.
Like, is he talking to the audience?
Yeah. He's like,
is Ferris here?
Ferris, can you see us?
Yeah. I heard you passed out at 31 Flavors.
All right. So Hughes wrote the screenplay in less than a week. Filming began in September of 1985, which is funny because it's actually portraying a date in June 5th, 1985. So it started in September and finished in November. And it was released by Paramount Pictures on June 11th, 1986. It was the 10th highest grossing film of 1986 in the United States. It grossed $70 million over a $5 million budget.
Nice work.
Good job, John Hughes and Matthew
Broderick. That's why John Hughes hires teenagers. So he doesn't have to pay Robert Redford money to get his fucking movie made.
The movie received acclaim from critics and audiences who praised particularly Broderick's performance, the humor of the film, and the tone. I think people immediately recommended. I've never met anyone who says I don't like.
Okay.
If you don't like Ferris Bueller's
Day probably off, also don't like puppies and babies.
No, hit us up in DM on Twitter or send us an email, and I would really love to understand what it is you don't like about Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I think the most important question would be who hurt you.
Right, like we've got a doll.
What's wrong with you?
We're gonna have you show us on the doll where you got hurt.
Like steal your girlfriend or something.
Oh my God. In 2014, this film was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress. That is deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
Maybe.
All right. So a spinoff is in works at Paramount Pictures.
Is that wise?
They're going to call it Sam and Victor's Day Off. And it's from the Cobra Kai creators.
Those guys are good, but you're fucking around with Oreos.
Yeah, they're
you're
good.
Taking a classic.
You don't have to do anything.
You're just like, maybe we'll, you know, whatever. We'll flip the cookie upside down or something. You don't have to do that. No, those characters were very funny in their little brief appearance. I'm sure they're like 75 years old right now, so obviously they have to find new dudes.
Mm-hmm.
But
One of them is dead.
Oh, well. Okay, well, definitely going to have to replace him then.
Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical because they're definitely going to have to fluff up that story a little bit because it can't just be, you know, one joyride in a Ferrari. I mean, they only have like 3 hours to, you know, of content.
Now, the problem that I see is that this film was originally filmed in 1985.
Yes.
So the 80s around them was very authentic.
Sure, they're going to have to fake that.
They're going to have to fake the 80s. And what I have come to realize in films that fake the 80s or television series that fake the 80s, they do it in that way where you go...
It's over the top.
It's too much. Like you're
it's like not everybody was wearing neon,
no,
people.
No, they did that, but you're showing it like this exaggerated version.
Right.
You know, it's satire more than it is reality.
Let me tell you a show that does that, in my opinion, almost perfectly.
Stranger Things.
No, The Americans. That will give you an authentic Northern Virginia 80s experience. Everything is kind of drab, you know, and smoky and shitty cars, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it doesn't look like everybody just jumped out of a Madonna concert, right? And that is a very authentic take. Stranger Things is what it is, right? It's science fiction and it's going to throw a lot of 80s nostalgia at you. That, like you said, it's all exaggerated. And as far as Ferris Bueller goes, yeah, they're going to have a little bit of a hard time, but they're going to be in cars most of the time. I'm sure they'll figure it out. I know you're skeptical.
I'm skeptical. I'm getting a little bit protective of the 80s now.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, hey, you don't know shit about the 80s, man.
Really, what they ought to do, what everyone ought to do, is go back and look at those movies. Like art directors and things like that should go back and look at those movies. That movie, Fast Times.
Yeah, for sure.
Go and look at the background in those movies because it's filmed in real time, right? And that would be more realistic than just, you know, somebody going, well, you know, I know that they used to wear O-rings. Okay, let's have them wear 900 O-rings.
Everybody is now dressed up like the Michelin tire man and in neon.
If they had big hair, wouldn't it be great if we could do it even bigger than anyone wore
hair
ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I want the hair to be as high as the Sears Tower.
So let's talk about life lessons. First of all, let me ask you, do you have any life lesson from the movie that kind of jumps off the top of your head?
The low-hanging fruit is the life lesson that Ferris directly tells you, hey, audience, wake up. This is the life lesson of this movie, okay?
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Carpe diem. Smell the roses, all the cliches. Take advantage of living in the day, living in the moment.
Well, I agree with you. Of course, that is the overarching life lesson.
They come right out and they're saying, For those of you who are studying this in film school, here is the life lesson of this movie.
Is he right?
Absolutely.
Does it hold true throughout your life or only when you're younger?
Of course it holds true throughout your life, but you are less willing to roll those dice. Mm-hmm. Like I, you know, might not go, you know what? I'm going to blow off work today and go find a parade. But if you thought I could get away with it, do you think I would do that?
Yeah, you would.
I would go find a parade.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? Is that microphone live? Hand it over.
So essentially the entire movie is about that. I mean, he sort of says, this is a beautiful day. For me to go to school today would be just ridiculous. And he blows off school.
Full disclosure.
That's a gutsy thing to do.
Full disclosure. Mm-hmm. I never blew off school. Like I skipped one day in my entire high school career. And that day was senior skip day. That was it. I didn't ever skip. I mean, I would fake sick sometimes, mm-hmm. right? I don't feel good, Mom, because I just want to sleep in. Mm-hmm. But I never, ever skipped. I guarantee you skipped because you're the devil.
But, I didn't only skip.
Oh, I'm sure you just were a wild child.
I was truant for 2 full quarters of senior year.
See, what the hell is wrong with you? What is going on in your head that would make you do that? You're disappointing everybody, Christine.
Now, in Ferris's case, like a lot of times we'd skip, but when I would skip, you would go, you'd start out the day, you'd have to leave home,
right.
And then you would and just you sneak take out. Off from school, yeah, just like right?
Bail. Nobody's watching the parking lot as you're driving away.
No. So he skips school, but then he goes on a massive adventure. So he's planning this huge big day and they go through all these shenanigans. And so his intention is not to just take the day off. It is to take the day off and just do something extravagant. And he succeeds. They go to all the best places. So how do you apply this, Max? Do you?
Oh,
maybe let me ask you. Do you?
I sure do. It's very easy to get caught up in kind of your mundane cycles, right? Mm-hmm. You get up, you walk the dumb dog, you take a shower, you go to work, you come home, you eat dinner, you watch some TV, you go to bed,
right?
And like, if you live just like that, then, you know, the days just kind of blur together and you really never have, you haven't, maybe on the weekends you go out to dinner or you go do whatever, right?
Yeah, but that's what you always do.
Yeah. I know. I'm saying these are life lessons that you need to be learning from Ferris Bueller. And by the way, I do not always do that.
No, I'm not saying you always do that, but that's what people do. Even if you, if you sometimes go out for dinner, I see. Here's what I would say. I would say, of course, first of all, the entire movie is based on this premise. That's
correct.
The entire purpose for having
they
this
they come day right
off.
Out and tell
they
you.
Just come right out and tell you. So this is the entire purpose for having this day off. That is easier when you are young.
No doubt. Fewer responsibilities.
I don't know. I feel like as you age, perhaps you get into a comfortable routine and comfortable.
No doubt about it.
Is much easier and more pleasurable, perhaps, to older people or people who are aging than novelty.
Right. And I think that's because you get set in these kind of, you know, you create a groove, right, in your mm-hmm. life. You create a well-worn path mm-hmm. that you always travel down.
Yes.
But if you can find ways to occasionally break that pattern, mm-hmm. stop, or even if you're on one of your weekend excursions, going out for dinner or whatever, don't just do it perfunctorily. Like mm-hmm. stop for a second and recognize, you know, what is going on. Here I am. I'm with somebody I care about. I'm having this great dinner. Mm-hmm. The view is amazing. Whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Or even just this walk. It's a beautiful day outside. And mm-hmm. you just have to take a second and just squeeze a little joy out of it, mm-hmm. right? Savor it just a little.
How has COVID had an impact on this?
Well, I mean, it makes you appreciate what you lost, obviously, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you know, when we were in the middle of full lockdown and stuff, we definitely missed our, you know, times of going out and we had to improvise.
But right? See, to me, the improvisation was very enjoyable.
Right, because we created other opportunities for, you know, joy and happiness and entertainment. And but it would have been easy to just say, you know what, whatever, we're just going to watch more TV. Right. But no, you had ideas about us doing a 70s disco party.
Which was fantastic.
It was fantastic.
We had ideas about starting a podcast.
We did. And how did that ever turn out, by the way?
I don't know. I think okay.
Yeah. We should really do that someday.
Yeah, let's get that together.
Yeah. When you can break out of the norm, mm-hmm. right? You know, you have chances for, you know, new experiences and new joy. It's more enriching. You want to create some enrichment in your life. Try something new. Read a new book. Mm-hmm. Travel. Go somewhere different for dinner. Go crazy and put a little hot sauce on your food. You know, whatever it is to try to create a new experience. And by the way, you're not going to love every single one of those experiences. But at the end of the day, you sit back and go, yeah, that was a worthwhile day. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think they're talking about.
I agree. And I think that I definitely don't do enough of that. And I think we try to, but we live in such a small town.
Right? Yeah, but like, I think that's, I mean, I think it's easy to use that as an excuse too, right?
Yeah, well, it's for like, sure it is. Oh, I mean,
it's the same old places. It is. But you know what? We could, I mean, if we really tried hard, we could create, you know, a novel experience here, I'm sure.
So is he, I mean, obviously the whole purpose of the film is that, and he's very successful at it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Ferris knows how to create an adventure.
Easy to do when you're a teenager too. It's all novelty. It's all exciting and fun because you're just goofing off. And it's not, but I can even remember going, and Chicago's a good city for it.
Of course.
I can remember going down to Chicago when I was in my mid-20s and I was dating my ex-husband. It was always like, ooh, because it was always an excursion.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
it's also easier when you're not fucking tired all the time.
I know, it's
like,
true.
Ugh, life is so exhausting.
I know, it would be exhausting to have that day that they had.
I would do it.
But a good
I would
day.
Do it.
I mean.
And I'm telling you, if at some point we get to Chicago, we should do the Ferris Bueller experience. I'm down.
All right. Here's our next life lesson.
A, you can never go too far. B, if I'm going to get busted, it is not going to be by a guy like that.
Okay, so this is a two-parter. One is it possible to go too far?
Yeah, of course there it is. I mean, I think Ferris's point is you take it a little bit with a grain of salt, right? Because I think he would agree that sticking up a liquor store would be going too far.
Right.
Not, which is why he's not suggesting that. But he's saying, if you think to yourself, oh, I'm going too far, mm-hmm. then you're probably
limiting yourself
and you're diminishing the adventure. So he wants to just tell Cameron, you can never go too far, even though, you know, technically, yes, you probably can.
You can go too far. And to me, though, this is a situation where I look at it as you set a goal. And let's let that goal be a lofty goal. Let the goal be lofty. Don't do things by halves. Let the goal be lofty. And if you don't reach that lofty goal, there's some place here that you're going to, you know, somewhere underneath that goal.
Right.
It still may be a fantastic place that you will end up. Right.
But Ferris is not waking up and going, you know what? I want to do something mildly interesting today.
No, he certainly wasn't that day. Right.
Yeah.
He was all in. And I think that that's a really good life lesson.
It is.
And I, again, a lot of this to me, watching it reminded me of how optimistic youth is.
Of course.
Because it is. Because you have the whole world in front of you, have your whole life in front of you.
Right.
And I think as we age, we become more and more conservative. And I don't mean politically conservative.
No,
now.
But
I
you have more to lose. You have less to gain. You've seen a good chunk of the pattern of your life already.
Do you think you have less to gain? I think that that's something that we tell ourselves.
Right. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think like I could all of a sudden, you know, become a professional athlete at this point in my life.
No, but I mean, within the scope of what would be a challenging yet reasonable goal.
Sure.
You couldn't become a professional athlete, but a reasonable goal might be, well, strike out and try something new, like podcasting.
Right. Well, I don't know. That seems risky. I don't know if that's a good idea.
You know, and I mean, what is the risk? Yeah. The risk is that we would have done this and no one would have listened. Well, in the end, that's not how it's turned out.
We achieved at least.
Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening to us. But we were able to achieve that goal.
Yes.
It was outside of the box.
It's not something
that, and when I talk to people, a lot of times I'll be talking to people in my industry and they'll say, well, you know, how did you get through COVID? And I'd say, well, I started a podcast, and then they say, "Oh, what? You know, like you did?
What? Huh? That's not even possible for humans."
and then the story is that, well, we started this podcast, and well, do people listen to it? As a matter of fact, they do. So that is one of those things where it was not immediately obvious thing to do, but then it became the thing to do when we did it. There are places where I would be less ambitious, but I'm always ambitious. I'm always striving. And I think that though looks different as you get older. I think it just does.
Sure.
And I feel such a sense of nostalgia, and I don't know if it's just nostalgic longing or if it is just longing to be able to have that kind of optimism again.
Yeah.
Again, it's a thing that is more, and that's interesting to me, and maybe a thread that I want to pull at some point, which is as we age, and you know, we're middle-aged now at Gen X, and
I'm a little bit more than that.
Well,
I think.
Okay, you're a boomer, but
I'm just a little bit more than middle-aged, unless you think that I'm going to live until I'm 116.
But you might, though, the way you're going. Well, you look like you could.
Well, we'll see.
Aging, the way we age, and the way I wonder if we are more at our middle age or less or the same level of ambitious or hopeful.
And I don't know if I would call me ambitious, because obviously I would not have started this podcast without you kind of, you know,
saying,
dragging me into it. Yeah.
Podcast.
Yeah.
What would you have done? Nothing.
No, nothing. Yeah, probably.
A lot of TV and video games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Interesting. Well, let's talk
about... So, good job.
Yeah. Way. Well done me. Okay. Let's talk about another life lesson. Let's talk about part two of this life lesson, actually.
All right.
And a guy like that is not going to be the one to bust me.
Right.
I think that's hubris.
Of course it is.
I think that is a dangerous way to think.
Maybe, yeah.
And I think that at any age, that kind of underestimating an adversary is dangerous. I think that in this case, it worked out for Ferris, because, of course, it's funnier if it works.
And he's Ferris, yeah.
And he's Ferris. And part of the reason that it works is that he is so courageous. He just plows forward. He does not give...
Isn't seize up with fear.
No. He's agile in his con.
Yeah.
And
well, so let's think about that. So yes, you're right. It could make him, you know, overconfident, but it also could make him just say, "This guy is the person who's trying to stop me. I'm going to try even harder to make sure a schmuck like that doesn't stop me."
Yeah, I get it, and I get that guy was meant to be a schmuck, but then as an adult now, I kind of go, "Guy's just there doing his job." He was snooty.
Snotty.
Snooty.
Snotty.
Snotty. But he was just doing his job. You know, and of course, Ferris came in without a reservation.
Yeah, and scammed him.
And that's okay, because it's funny.
Yeah.
But also, I think, you know, it's a little bit obnoxious. It's a little bit obnoxious for him to say, well, then this isn't the guy that's going to be the one to do it.
I'm going
to
take this guy down because, you know, he's beneath me. Which, you know,
okay, Ferris,
people feel that.
They do feel that way. I mean, you do frequently.
I wasn't going to say me. I didn't want to make it all about me.
No, but in this case,
I feel that way.
I think that a lot of times, and I think that probably resonates with you. And my thinking is, do I have that? There are times where there are times where I think to myself, no, come on, not today. And not me, and it's not going to be you.
Yeah. Yeah, right, you're not that girl, or you're not that guy.
Right. That is not how this is going to go. But the way I feel about it is, I say to myself, don't underestimate people, because I think that is one of the places where people go very, very wrong. There are people who have, they don't think things through multiple steps ahead. They think things through one or two steps ahead, but they don't think things through. They don't see the big, big picture. And I don't understand how that has that happened to me. Yes. Sometimes that happens to me. I don't know. You just have to see you have to be able to see the bigger picture. And maybe Ferris could.
Well, and it is easy that when someone is kind of a shitty person, mm-hmm. it's easy to assume they're also shitty at pretty much everything.
Right.
Right. It's like, well, they're acting dumb, therefore they're dumb and they're never going to figure this out, or mm-hmm. I'll just be able to, you know, breeze past them, whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is a danger sometimes. Or you can even underestimate, you know, people who are on your side, right? Like, you know, oh, I can't really trust them to do this because they just aren't capable of doing that. And then boom, they're capable. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over underestimating somebody.
No,
because I'm not really at war.
No,
where my life is in danger or anything.
No. So. I mean, but it's fun though sometimes to try and outwit people.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's a life lesson: fear and anxiety kill your self-worth.
Yes, and in fact, I'm going to go one step further. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say stoicism is Cameron's answer, right? Mm-hmm. Because he is so worried about what other people think. Mm-hmm. He's worried about it, what his dad thinks, about what the school thinks, you know, what other people think. He's trying everything he can to rein in the puckish nature of Ferris Bueller, mm-hmm. right? For the whole day. In fact, he just wants to spend that entire day under his covers, you know, hiding. Mm-hmm. So his problem is that he is afraid to be Ferris. He's afraid to be like Ferris. He doesn't want, he's afraid to take what he wants, do what he wants. He's controlled by his fears. Mm-hmm. And if you ask a Stoic, where's that coming from? It's the fear of how other people think. Mm-hmm. And a Stoic will say, what you really should say is, it doesn't matter what other people think, right? Mm-hmm. Their opinion of me is something I can't control. Their actions are things I can't control. All I control is mm-hmm. how I behave. Mm-hmm. You know, that was Cameron's problem, right? That was right from the get-go.
Yeah, he was really worried about what other people, you know, the consequences, right?
Absolutely. So
he was paralyzed because he wasn't sure what kind of consequences he'd face. I would say that Cameron, one of Cameron's problems was that he was not being seen. And if he was being seen, he was afraid what the reaction to being seen would be.
Right, because he's not Ferris, right? He doesn't have that level of confidence.
Right.
And he's definitely afraid of what his dad thinks, because his dad sounds like a real dick.
Yeah.
My old man pushes me around. I never said anything. Well, he's not the problem. I'm the problem. I got to take a stand against him. I am not going to sit on my ass as the events that affect me unfold to determine the course of my life. I'm going to take a stand. I'm so sick of his shit. I can't stand him, and I love this goddamn car. Who do you love? Who do you love? You love a car. Bitch.
But he's also afraid of what other, you know, what his friends think, what teachers think, what, you know, the maitre d' at the restaurant thinks.
Right.
And he's dragged unwillingly, mm-hmm. really, into this adventure that he would have preferred just to stay home and be sick.
Right.
Right? And that was his thing. And he had to be forced, really, to experience all these things.
Mm-hmm. And in the end, I think you walk away from it feeling, well, we'll talk about him a little bit, but in our After Dark episode about this. But in the end, it's really this whole day is concocted by Ferris to bring Cameron along.
You can argue, and many have, mm-hmm. that this is really Cameron's story arc, because mm-hmm. Ferris is Ferris. He's just
from
a force of nature.
Yeah.
He doesn't change. Mm-mm. It's really Cameron's story arc from timid, sickly, fearful, to finally, you know, someone who embraces joy and experience and is willing now to stand up for themselves.
Stand up for themselves and face consequences. Because obviously what he's allowed to have happen, which is Ferris takes...
What happened was
is that, of course, Ferris takes his dad's Ferrari...
Right.
Vintage Ferrari that man never drives.
With this vague idea and misunderstanding of how odometers work.
That's right. And they take it to perpetrate this day off and excursion. And, you know, that's not, I mean, it may be fun. It's not the right thing to do. And I think that, you know, and then
it's definitely transgressive.
Right. And in the end, they wreck the entire car.
A bit. I mean, it's a bit wrecked.
So they, and Cameron does that intentionally and then says, I'll take the heat for this.
Cameron, it's my fault. I'll take the heat for it. We'll wait for your father to come home, and when he gets here, I'll tell him that I did it. He hates me anyway.
No. I'll take it. No, I'll take it.
No. No, you don't want this much heat.
I want it. If I didn't want it, I wouldn't have let you take the car out this morning.
I made you take the car this morning.
I could have stopped you. It is possible to stop Mr. Ferris Bueller, you know. No, I want it, I'm gonna take it. That's it. When Morris comes home, he and I'll just have a little chat. It's cool. No, it's gonna be good. Thanks anyway.
He's willing at that point to deal with the consequences.
Yeah, finally
of whatever
he's
going to
face his dad and stand up for himself.
Stand up for himself and face this fear.
Probably
and
took then, a pretty serious beating, given the times.
Also is willing to have this confrontation, which he previously wasn't able to do. So Ferris's plan in that day does move the needle a little bit.
Right. Now let's not give Ferris a complete pass here. Because he did convince his friend to steal his father's very expensive car.
Sure.
And manipulated his friend to do this crime, right? Now, did it end up maybe improving Cameron's life? Well, you can argue that, absolutely. But he definitely did put Cameron in a tough spot because he wanted to have a lot of fun.
Well, he did, right. And Cameron makes other offers. He says, let's rent a car or whatever.
I'll get a limo, a nice stretch job.
Yeah. All right, so what's another one of your life lessons?
It's really a lesson about control. Take control of your own life. Ferris takes control of his own life. Takes control of other people's lives as well. The life lesson is, if you do that, it really kind of frees you from fear. It opens up the experiences available to you. I think makes you a more interesting person, right? Because nobody really loves just a follower. And that's what Cameron starts out as, right? He's afraid and he just follows. He'll allow Ferris to do anything he wants, really, because Ferris knows how to manipulate him. But it's really take charge of your own life.
Well, they're very mindful about it. Right. So you're saying really actually seize the moment, be in control. So my question was about fear and anxiety. Seize control could be one of the ways to quell the fear and anxiety.
Absolutely. Because if you're just relying on, the momentum of your daily existence or other people, you're not in control. And that breeds anxiety. Now, some people are very anxious about taking control, but if you can successfully take control of your own life, a lot of the things you're anxious about just kind of disappear.
Well, such that you can have control, right? Of course, we understand that control is essentially an illusion.
Yes. So it's free will, but we still want to exercise it, right?
Okay, right. But it still does feel good if you take charge of a situation where you can influence it in some way.
Absolutely.
I think that you're right. I think that that is definitely, and it's a lesson I hadn't considered. So how about this one?
So you're pissed off because he ditches and doesn't get caught, is that it?
Basically.
And your problem is you.
Excuse me?
Excuse you. You ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself, a little less time worrying about what your brother does. That's just an opinion.
When I was talking about stoicism, I was really not thinking as much about Cameron as I was about Jeannie. Her mental well-being is really initially very centered around Ferris.
Yeah.
Live your own life. Don't worry about what Ferris is doing. Mm-hmm. That's not your life, right? Do your own thing. Mm-hmm. Date Charlie Sheen or make out with him in a police station, whatever you want to do. But don't obsess over what other people think about other people. I mean, that's so far removed from what you can control. Mm-hmm. And like when she's walking through the hallway and they're like taking a donation for Ferris, right? But somebody says, we're trying to save Ferris. And she's just like, ugh. It just hurts her feelings that Ferris is getting attention from people that are not her. Mm-hmm. That's so beyond your control. You can't worry about shit like that. Just be Jeannie. who ends up being pretty cool, right?
Well, ultimately she does because she ends up helping Ferris. You really are set up to favor Ferris.
Everybody, absolutely. Of course, the title of the movie gives you a tip. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, she ends up having, you know, pretty good martial arts skills and whatever. But she kicks the shit out of the child molester, Principal Rooney.
Oh, I know.
The stoicism there is definitely, don't be obsessed with how other people are doing or how they're feeling or how other people are feeling about how they're doing. Focus on what you're doing mm-hmm. to increase the joy of your own life.
Right. It's a good maxim. Not easy to live by, all of us.
Oh, absolutely not. No, stoicism is not easy. You know, I like stoicism, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius, mm-hmm. all those guys. But they really didn't do like what I would call proper philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't start with a premise and reason from it. Really, they just gave you a collection of aphorisms. Mm-hmm. But they seem to me to be pretty wise mm-hmm. in general, right? If you read the Stoics, you're like, this is just good, well-reasoned common sense. It's mm-hmm. not a complicated argument like Descartes. It's really just, don't worry about other people. I think we're going to talk about the importance of confidence because that really enables all the other lessons, mm-hmm. right? If you are worried about if you're cool enough, I'm not mm-hmm. worried, that is. If you're worried about what people are going to think.
Well, isn't this really what we talked about? Like, you can't really worry. This goes back to, like, stoicism.
It is stoicism, but it's also, confidence really is, other people are going to be into this. Like, I think when I get up to dance, you know, as horrible as you find that.
No, it's not horrible. You're a great dancer, and a lot of people really enjoy it.
And that's what I assume, right? I understand intellectually that not everybody will enjoy it, but really in my heart of hearts, I'm like, yeah, they enjoying it.
No, see, this is so wrong.
Because I'm confident, right? I'm confident. And if I'm wrong, okay, I'm wrong, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't bother me either.
It's so interesting how that's possible.
What? How what is possible?
You just suffer from no chagrin.
You don't want to be overconfident, right? I don't want to say like, yeah, I could absolutely walk across this high wire over the Grand Canyon. No problem. I have confidence in myself. I would just die. Right.
Right.
I would just fall off and die.
Right.
So you don't want overconfidence, but it's good to be confident.
Do you feel, are there times where you feel that you're overconfident?
Oh, I'm sure. Right. So, because sometimes when we're playing trivia, right, I look around, I look at the competition, I'm like, please, they don't have a shot. But they have 10 people on their team and we have 2.
Right.
So I get a little overconfident. I'm like, yeah, we're still going to crush them. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess we didn't crush them. Mm-hmm. Right. But sure, I've been overconfident before. I mean, you can't not be overconfident at some point unless you live in fear.
Right. Because I think that overconfidence is symptomatic of someone who is fearful.
What?
Or it can be. You know, like when someone is overcompensating. They're being overly confident.
I don't know if you can fake that.
A lot of times
yourself.
I go, are you just like, what are you hiding? Like deep down, what is this mask that you're wearing? Why are you masking like this? That's what I always feel like somebody's got.
I don't know, is that overconfidence or false confidence?
Well, I mean, false confidence to me is if you act confident in something that you're not confident.
You know you're not good at it.
Yeah. But if you are just overly gregarious, maybe.
Right.
You know?
You're loud.
Yeah.
You know, or you're, like false bravado.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have to be, it's just bravado. But what ends up happening is that it's compensating for an insecurity, honestly. And I don't know what to say. There are times where I see people do things, and this isn't you necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's anybody where they'll throw out their credentials.
Right.
And it's always things like, I graduated with this degree.
Right. Online, right?
Right.
Where nobody knows. So you can brag or you can lie. And I've seen it before too. Like, yeah, I'm just so much smarter than everybody else. Or I have, you know, I went to Harvard or whatever. And they obviously did not, mm-hmm. right? Or it's just.
Or even if they did.
Yeah.
And to me,
and it doesn't translate into actual ability.
Right, right. Like throwing out your credentials, particularly if your credentials are 30 years old or 40 years old or whatever. It's sort of like, you know, and yes, you may be working in that field, whatever. But to sort of preface it with, these are my credentials.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah.
That's like me saying, let me tell you about my SAT scores, right?
Yeah.
Because it's. it's irrelevant. Now, I do it kind of as a joke sometimes. I'm like, have I ever mentioned that I'm a philosophy major? Right? I do that as a joke, right? Because I realize that that doesn't actually translate into anything major in
the
real world.
You're joking about that?
No, I mean, I actually was a philosophy major, but no, you mean, oh, I like mean, when you, I throw it out there? Oh, it, yeah.
That's meant to be ironic?
Absolutely. Well, it's not ironic. It's a joke, right? Well, I mean, like, why would anybody care about that?
Well,
right?
I didn't realize that you were, I
My
thought
God,
that
you
did
just,
that.
You're just not, you know. No, you're just not tuned in.
I thought that you, oh, no. Mark.
We
I
do it here on the podcast. I joke about it all the time.
I know,
I'm like,
but
I may have mentioned once or twice that I am a philosophy major.
Mark, I actually thought.
You are such a ding dong. You really are.
This whole time. And Mark interacts a lot on Twitter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He says it all the time.
Yeah.
And
because
I
it's
thought,
funny.
I thought it was being. He.
Like, I'm really
You're
saying,
actually
I'm like, do you think I'm like presenting some kind of imaginary image of me in like a houndstooth jacket with leather patches and sitting there smoking a pipe? Well, I'm basically considered to be the Bertrand Russell of Vero Beach.
I guarantee you that people actually
I don't care
that you were doing
good.
That on purpose.
Oh, good. Like, I don't look
as
I don't,
a credential.
Not every single joke I tell. Sometimes it's just for me. And I'm like, I understand they're not going to get it, but it amuses me. How do you not get that? You're smart enough to have gotten that.
No, I just thought that that's your ego.
You thought that I was like,
no, I did.
Maybe he really thinks that is kind of a big deal.
I did.
I mean, whatever.
It was
my refuge when I decided physics was not for me. That's what it was.
I'm dying because
my God,
I thought
you are
that this
so
is
gullible.
100%. I did.
You got trolled by me.
You got trolled. I've been trolled.
And you don't even know.
I've been trolled by you since the first time I ever met you.
Absolutely.
Then.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know, but this just makes everything different.
That's like, maybe I've made the wrong choice here.
Okay.
Confidence is enabling.
I think that for me, it is. It's a moderation game. So,
yeah.
So sort of confidence, and I understand it. And I can I understand when I'm not feeling confident. I'm very, very cued into that. And I will do my best on those days to not have to do things that require me. And I think that that's because I'm shy. And in order to not be shy, to not behave as a shy person, to overcome the shyness in public, because I know that that's crippling.
Right.
I have learned how to compensate for that.
Yeah.
But in order to do a convincing job compensating, I've got to have a certain level of baseline confidence.
Absolutely.
And if I'm not, for whatever reason, that day or whatever it is,
can't do it.
I can't do it. And you've seen this in action.
Absolutely.
Where I will say to you now, and this will usually have to do with like maybe podcast posts or something that I was going to, that I want to post on or have you post on the podcast. And I'll say to you, don't do it right now. Just wait. And then, and then I'll say, okay, now you can do it or I'll
because
go
I,
and do it.
Yeah.
But it's because I've got it in my head.
You
I've
have built your imposter syndrome.
I've built up my confidence level to where it needs to be in case there's any kind of whatever fallback
kind of
from whatever it is.
Slap back
I can
or
be
whatever.
A little bit more impervious than I would normally be. Like I've figured it out how to put that armor on.
Yeah. And you realize that you could just act like you have the armor on all the time because eventually you get there. Right.
I don't know. See,
so what I do is I'm
fake
like,
it till you make it.
Yeah,
but
I'm like, I'm feeling a little unconfident. Well, whatever. I'll just go for it and act like it, you know, it'll work. Acting like it'll work makes it work a lot of times.
Do you know, in my head, I would be playing that over, even if it ended up being successful.
Oh, I know.
I would be replaying it. And especially if it went wrong, I would be replaying it. And I would be, because I like to be pretty confident in the outcome. I know we can't always. That's a control thing.
Yeah.
And it's also a shyness thing.
Yeah.
You know? It's a great movie and I love talking about it. And we're going to actually extend this conversation into Gen Extemporaneous After Dark.
That's right. We're going to talk about some of the spicier moments in the pool.
Now we'll talk about some trivia and then we're going to talk about the story arc. So it's the fact that it's Cameron's story arc and what does that look like? And then the other thing I want to talk about is Ferris a good friend?
Right.
And we'll do that in the Gen Extemporaneous After Dark episode.
Which will cost you
$5
a latte a month.
But by now we've got over I think close to 20 episodes that you can binge and we do three extra
episodes a month. Yeah, that's a lot.
At least three. So, all right, everyone, thank you so much for coming to follow us here each week. We appreciate it. Please come and join us on Twitter. We have a podcast page at Extemporaneous2. I am at Christina Gen X, and Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. I'm going to say bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.